echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations innovate and grow value in a digital world. Episode 25, The Cloud CapEx Myth. In this episode, we'll discuss how enterprises address technology and strategic transformation, and how financial engineering of CapEx helps in the migration to the cloud. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. Joining me today is John Nazeth, CFO Practice Lead and Senior Principal Cloud Advisor at Google Cloud. Welcome, John. Would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself and what you do at Google?
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is John Nazeth. I've had a career living in between that world of finance and technology. I'm thrilled to be here at Google because this is the perfect landing place for it. Started out at KPMG helping companies like Microsoft, Oracle, and IBM help their customers get value out of technology and how to optimize what they're doing. After that, I had the opportunity to work at Equinix, a giant data center company, and through their hypergrowth experience, managed a number of transformation initiatives and ended up working hand in hand with the executives there and learning a lot through them. From there, I launched and was the CFO after that for multiple companies, global companies, smaller startups with multiple solid exits, and learned a lot and had a great time. I was looking at what I want to do next and always been a big fan of Google and have a lot of friends here. I really am ambitious about the idea of being able to take the lessons learned from many years of doing this with many other companies and how can I help apply those so that other companies can avoid the pitfalls and some of the challenges and get the benefits of experiences I've had and how we can work together to help them grow what they're doing.
This is going to be a great conversation because I've done something similar. I've been a part of a lot of different types of startups and small companies as a CTO. So I'm on the flip side of you. And I think one of the conversations we're going to have today is all about that bridging between the CTO, the technology teams, and the CFO, the financial teams. So I'm really excited to talk about this also. One of the other things that we do on the show is we ask our guest about what is the last thing they've downloaded. So is there anything that you've recently watched, read, downloaded that you would like to share with the listeners?
Sure. In today's technology world, downloading something is an interesting angle of it. The last thing I've downloaded technically is a great white paper that we launched around cloud FinOps and how companies can benefit from governance and cost optimization in the cloud. However, from a personal side, I've frankly become a little bit addicted to watching YouTube videos. Like rather than watching structured shows, there's so much on there. And there's a channel around independent films that my wife and I have really been enjoying. And we'll find that hours have gone by and we've watched a bunch of things. I don't really download it, but definitely excited to be part of a broader company that's doing so many awesome things out there in the universe.
I love it. Awesome. I'm going to have to go look for that channel now. So you'll have to share it with us and we'll share it with the audience. So let's start here. One of the terms that I think is going to come out a lot during our conversation is EBITDA. Could you explain what that is for the audience?
EBITDA is just a different type of profit. Whether you talk about net profit all the way down, EBITDA is a way of saying, what is your operating profit? It's a good proxy for understanding what is the operating cash coming in and out of the business. What it doesn't exclude is the key thing is it's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So it's as simple as what the acronym means. Depreciation, without getting into too much technical details, is excluded from it. And it's just a way of looking at operating profit.
Another good place for us to start is you previously were a CFO and you're working with a lot of CFOs at Google Cloud. I'd like to think, especially as I mentioned in my world, there's CTOs, there's CIOs, there's chief digital officers. Are there different flavors of CFOs?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give a little more context, I have a master's degree in information systems and technology. And so I've balanced where in my role, I end up being able to speak technology language to the right CIOs, CTOs, but then being able to turn around and talk to the CFOs in their language. And oftentimes the CFO comes in kind of three main forms. People are familiar with a governance-focused CFO, and that will be someone who is a big four oftentimes, a CPA is an example. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are CFOs who maybe came from an investment banking background. And so those are your investor-focused ones, and they're all about pumping up the company's value, getting a high growth so that they can sell the company. And then the third type is oftentimes an operational focused CFO. And a lot of those might also be a COO type responsibilities. Oftentimes you'll see a CFO has the CIO reporting up to them in some cases. So just thinking about it as who has the reins of how things are going to translate into the financials. My favorite way of describing it is, from my perspective, financial is really an output of a process of a system. And whatever all those financial results you're looking for, you need to understand what are the leading indicators, operational, technology, that are going to drive the financial outputs that you want through the process.
So you're a financial person that has technology influence, and you work for a technology company. And oftentimes we see that those financial individuals may not have the full breadth of technology knowledge as they might need. How do we simplify those technology terms or language into financial language?
Yeah, good question. A lot of times it comes down to just a different language. It's choosing the right words for them to understand. Finance people, accountants, are really good at process. They understand process. They understand controls in the process. And so to the degree that you can find the right common understanding. However, I must say that a lot of CFOs nowadays are becoming more operationally focused. They're becoming very tech savvy. And at least the ones that end up being leaders of larger companies and successful companies, that you don't want to put them in a box and just say, hey, you're a controller, just the finance person. They'll embrace the technology side. And in fact, in many cases here at Google, I'm getting pulled into company discussions where the CFO is more forward-looking and is trying to help the CIO understand, hey, there's all these benefits moving to the cloud, but let's help the technology guys get comfortable with what the finance CFO sees as future financial benefits of moving to the cloud.
I think that's very interesting, because one of the challenges I've seen, especially in my previous life, was that having those conversations between the technology and business to influence what we need from a technology standpoint to make the operations or make the business profitable were oftentimes hard to do. It's almost like the start of a joke. A CEO and a CIO and a CFO enter a bar. What happens? Like, how do you get those three people to communicate together or see the same thing?
Yeah. And it really comes down to a set of discussions and some change management that needs to happen consistently between the person playing the role of CIO, CTO wearing that hat, and the person wearing the hat of the finance controller along those lines. So just as a quick example, as the finance or accounting leader, they're going to have set processes that they have to be audited against. They have to attest in many cases that these processes are in place and they're working according to design. And so when IT comes and says, I want to do something differently, accounting guys might say, no, we can't do that. Or, oh, no, that's different. And there's a discussion that needs to happen around, okay, as we're moving to the cloud, there is going to be some things that are different. And the accounting guys, the finance guys are supportive of change. They have processes to control change. But recognizing that there are opportunities to change and improve the profitability, improve the efficiency of the company, is some of the discussions we have. So what are the treatments of CapEx? What things do you want to capitalize? And there's various just series of handful of discussions that will likely require the accounting to change a few policies. But there's nothing different or revolutionary guidance that Google's introducing. We're just identifying that lots of companies have found ways to make this very profitable for them by moving to the cloud and to avoid some of the perceived pitfalls.
Yeah, we've seen upwards to a 13% increase in market capitalization from organizations that move to the cloud. I would think that that's a no-brainer if I'm sitting around a table and having a conversation with the CEO and the CFO and trying to better understand how we can make these types of investments. Yet there still seems to be a barrier to moving that forward. How do we solve that?
Well, there's different aspects of it and different decisions along the way that need to be discussed. So there's the long-term strategy around, okay, I was on a call with an executive leader last week, and he was throwing up all these concerns about current state and wanting to hold on to the current state of on-prem. But then a minute later, he talked about how 5 years from now, of course, everything's going to be in the cloud and it's all going to be cost savings. And he's totally sold on the benefits 5 years from now. But being able to work through that change was his real concern. And it reached a point where I asked, okay, recognizing that there's this change that's coming 5 years from now, do you want to be in the position of defending why you didn't make that change? Or do you want to be in the position of having guided the company through the change, being that person who can then help lead the future? And he definitely wanted to be focused on leading the future. But it's a hard change. There are sunk costs in the current state, and there's a bunch of considerations. And that's really what, frankly, I spend a lot of my time doing, is helping CFOs navigate challenges that I've personally managed multiple times. And again, speaking the language of accounting and doing that translation, they'll get it. There's no real issue. But going into the discussion, there's a lot of anxiety. In many cases, they're concerned that they're going to have to tell IT no. they're going to have to tell IT, no, we can't do this. What thing you want to do that's so strategic? And that's a big fear for a lot of finance leaders. They want to let IT and the business lead the business, but they think, oh no, because of this CapEx forecast issue, as an example, I'm going to have to throttle things back.
Yeah, I think your example is very interesting. The decision between what to do today versus what to do in the future. And a lot of people are still relatively scared of making those decisions today. And I think as we look at migrating into the cloud, oftentimes the conversation is around what is the technology benefits, security, scale, you know, some of these buzzwords that represent the cloud. But the financial piece of that is usually an afterthought.
Exactly. And a lot of times being an afterthought, then when suddenly finance is brought into the picture, it creates a lot of stress because depending on what the technology strategy and plan is, the perception is it could blow up your forecasts. And what you've just committed to Wall Street or to your board is you're going to hit is performance targets might come at risk. And every CFO wants to avoid having to have that discussion. The other consideration that is a fear that comes up is executive comp. So it's very personal to a lot of these executives as far as, well, if I don't hit this EBITDA number, this profit number, or whatever my executive comp metric is based on, then should I wait a year and rebaseline the comp so that I can get my bonus? And bottom line is there's ways to navigate through it to not have to avoid the future and move forward with your plans.
On that, is there other aspects of a cloud strategy that organizations can look at to maybe offset some of those costs?
Absolutely. So as an example, as you're moving out of a data center as perhaps that has a lot of CapEx spend and you're moving into a cloud environment that the perception is going to have less, there's the option of capitalizing more of the assets that you develop internally. And every finance accounting person is going to know that you can capitalize internally developed assets. However, it can be challenging or there's requirements around doing it where you have to track what are the costs. You have to understand and have measurable proof of what those costs were. And so a lot of times the accounting guys will say, oh, no, we can't do that. Going back to the discussions that need to happen, the technology guys, the CIO, CTO says, oh, we can absolutely do that, especially with the cloud environment. It's easier to understand who was working on what and where and what costs went into developing this new asset. So as your CapEx is going down because of data center migration, as an example, there are opportunities to increase the assets that you capitalize from internally developed technology and innovation. So especially with Google Cloud, where we're helping companies, the whole reason they're doing this is to develop new innovation technology opportunities. Those are two areas that can counterbalance, as an example.
I really like that idea about monetizing assets and productizing those assets. And one of the things that obviously the cloud presents are those opportunities. So an example of this, we have a customer that's a bank in Indonesia called Bank BRI, and they've taken their data and different processes leveraging APIs and have directly monetized those assets. And they're generating an additional $50 million in revenue just from monetizing their data. That's basically what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. And I've been the CFO of companies where the future strategy of the business requires us to be able to move to this new digital strategy and innovation. The reason that you get your investors to give you the higher valuation and give you the cash to do it is to achieve these innovation strategies. And so they're caught in this hard place to say, I know I need to go there, and yet I don't know exactly step by step how to get there because I've got this legacy hardware data center CapEx, which creates this concern and this risk. So one of the things I wanted to highlight on this discussion is to demystify that myth. And it really is a myth. Yes, people are very focused. They think data center, they think CapEx. However, the majority of the costs in the data center are actually OpEx costs. If you think 60 to 80% of the cost of running a data center is the maintenance, is the utilities, is the labor. And so as you remove that 60 to 80% cost and replace it with cloud costs, which is also OpEx, you're seeing the costs go lower overall. There are some CapEx portions and they're concerned, well, what about the CapEx? Yes, and there's ways we can address that and we can talk about, but it's just to acknowledge that the large majority of the data center costs are actually OpEx. And so as you can transition from that OpEx environment to a lower cost OpEx environment, there's benefits of helping you get to your innovation strategy.
So I'm the last person who's going to recommend a reduction in headcount, but headcount is OpEx, right?
Yes, headcount is definitely OpEx, but there's many other things that are in OpEx. That's a fear also of people. Well, I don't want to cut my team. I've been through this many, many times, and I've been through this personally in my own role. technology people are innovative. Being a good technology leader doesn't mean you have all the answers. It means you know how to find the answers. And as technology's evolved over time, anyone who has a decent number of skills or a decent number of experienced years doing this are going to know how to evolve and move to new innovation things. I've worked with my teams who are very data center focused to being cloud innovation leaders. And when I do my financial analysis, the last thing I want to touch is the people cost. So in the scope of what I'm talking about, it's all I mentioned, maintenance and utilities, perhaps labor, contractor labor, but you're able to repurpose your talent. And those are the people that know your business. You do not want to be cutting those heads as you're doing this part.
Totally agree with you here that the people in your business are your greatest assets. They're going to be the ones that have the most drive for innovation. And one of the factors that people may or may not consider is that by providing them with the tools, the technology, the cloud to help them become more innovative, they are going to produce more. Their output is going to be greater, which is directly going to impact your numbers.
And you're helping them in their career development. They're going to become more valuable in the marketplace. It's only good. So there's different discussion another day. We can dive all into how do you manage the people side of a transformation. But I'll just make one comment that a lot of times in data center transformation, people talk about bleeding the assets. And that's a strategy. It can also apply if people are your best assets. I don't recommend bleeding your people, but there's great ways to work with your people to extend their value into the process.
I think another area of conversation for us is finance typically looks at IT spend somewhat holistically. They bucket everything together. What additional technology areas might be critical to understand what the value of cloud brings?
From an IT perspective, it is all bundled together, but that's where finance has different views because they'll categorize it and bucket into other views. So that's some of the discussion needs to happen as far as which buckets it's in. The cloud enables more flexibility, frankly, because if you think about being locked into long-term assets, long-term investments of a data center as an example, you're able to turn up and turn down these services as needed. You're able to manage it at a container level and not need to build out this big infrastructure around a certain service you can now access that in many cases, Google is providing. So when we were talking about innovation, Google is providing not just an infrastructure platform, but a data and ML and all these other great things. They're helping companies skip past a lot of the development timeline to start just leveraging what we've already are now making available to companies. In doing that, I wanted to call out, we've already talked about developing their own internal assets, but Google also has assets that we've developed in many cases in the open source community that you can leverage and can also be capitalized. So even though an IT leader might say, this is all just spend, for the finance guy, certain spend is OpEx, certain spend is CapEx. And in some businesses, utilities as an example, they're really constrained around, no, you have this much OpEx to spend and you have this much CapEx you can spend. And the IT leaders have those two buckets. And since we're going to be changing those buckets potentially, they're very focused on, well, what parts of the Google Cloud solutions could I capitalize?
When the conversation of the cloud comes up, is there roughly an idea the cloud is going to provide us more technology and innovation, that type of strategy, or is the cloud going to help us reduce our cost? Because that almost feels like there are two different camps.
Yeah, it's definitely perception is you have to solve for one or the other. But frankly, that's why I enjoy it so much, because consistently I've been able to find the and the way to do both. It might not be obvious and it's not a one size fits all for every company, just because different companies are at different stages of their own life cycle. Different companies have different legacy tech debt they have to work through. But consistently, we're able to find ways to help companies achieve the technology innovation they want and do it within the cost constraints. The best way to explain it is scope, schedule, and resources. So in sometimes you can always achieve that technology innovation you want and you can get the most bleeding edge pieces of it that you want now as soon as possible. But perhaps some of the legacy tech debt, you stretch that out over time. And so between scope, schedule, and resources, if you're constrained for cost, resources, and you're constrained for scope, then you need to manage your schedule. And that's the other variable. And we help companies work through those strategic plans and figure out how do you work within the constraints you want to achieve the financial forecast that you want. But those are the variables, scope, schedule, resources.
In one of our previous episodes of the show, we had this conversation around agile technology economics, which is I can be very agile with my financial planning based on that flexibility and scale and adaptability in the moment that I need it. How often does that type of conversation come into play as you're talking with customers?
Not often enough, I'll tell you. In many cases, companies come in and they're looking to learn from Google about the different ways to do it, but they come in thinking about this as a long-term waterfall style transformation. And one of the topics we discuss a lot is the idea of FinOps, the idea of being able to manage your costs in many different ways. So here's a good example is a lot of companies are moving to Kubernetes, and we talk about Anthos and these different amazing technologies. But the reason I'm more excited about it isn't the amazing technology and all the great things that it can do. I'm excited because of the great cost savings that it can enable, the agility, the nimbleness that these technologies that Google has really led the way in the industry to introduce enables you to only use costs when you need it. So removing waste from the process and not having to wait while you spin up a big server or not having to have a server sitting there that goes unutilized until your peak season. There's so many opportunities for cost savings that can be introduced.
You just mentioned waste. What are some of those waste?
I'm alluding to a Lean or Six Sigma style. So the main point is that any cost optimization strategy that a finance person would apply or that an operations leader would be familiar with can also be applied just as well into cloud environment. And when you talk about Lean, there are 8 different types of waste that are defined and you go through and you look for them. Idle resources, too much movement, migration costs and different things. So really all the technology strategies we're doing are helping alleviate those through different strategies.
Let's say I've got a financial forecast, and within that financial forecast, I have a certain amount of CapEx. What can Google do to help me solve all of these technology problems we've been discussing?
While still maintaining that CapEx forecast. Well, we already talked about how the majority of that data center migration is actually OpEx. And so what you're left with is the CapEx part. What we typically see is that as companies are moving out of the data center, as an example, they then may be looking for additional things they could capitalize. They want to capitalize more of different options. And so there are some strategies that Google has helped companies implement and options to consider. But to be clear, Google's not giving guidance or accounting rules around how to do things. All we're doing is introducing the options so that they can evaluate them and make their own accounting decisions. I've mentioned before how one of the strategies is to start capitalizing application development that's done internally and the different ways that the cloud can help you do that easier. In addition to that, though, there are a handful of solutions that Google offers, which, again, if the company decides to apply certain accounting treatments and meet certain criteria in how they do the purchase and structure the deal, they can be capitalized. Some examples of that is sole tenant nodes, where you're basically leasing an equipment that is in our data centers and you get a unique identifier and it's the same as you would lease it in your own data center. A type of a sole tenant node could be an Oracle bare metal machine, as an example. Other examples include where software licensing is something that companies will capitalize all the time. There's no mystery there. And some of the products that Google offers around Anthos, around VMware as a service, are things that could have portability. You can do it in our cloud, or you can do it on-prem, or you can do it in another cloud. And so those are also examples that, because of that criteria qualification, could be capitalized if the company wanted to. So one of the things that we'll do is look at the different type of workloads, look at the different types of future state. And I've seen companies where the CFO just simply needed to get a certain amount of those workloads into being on capitalizable assets. And we've said, okay, well, let's look at these workloads and see which ones we need to get onto a sole tenant node or Oracle bare metal to meet the criteria. What's interesting is between doing that and capitalizing more of the application development, we actually ended up having the similar or more capitalized assets as they did before they moved into the cloud. So for every company, it's going to be different, but there's not as much CapEx into the data center as you may think. A lot of it is OpEx. Starting to capitalize more application development and then looking at different workloads and figuring out, does your workloads meet the criteria to capitalize them by using different types of solutions that Google can offer?
So that's a great way to look at it from a Google perspective. If we take a outside view of this conversation and look at it from more of a financial business perspective, do we see financial calculations or maybe the standards for those calculations evolving to be more cloud friendly in the future?
Yes, it's evolving. Accounting guidance is always evolving. The simplest way to think about it, though, just to break it down, is the accounting rules around what is your matching principle? What are assets? So if you're developing a new asset, if you're developing something that has future value, then that can be capitalized. If you're just taking something in one place and moving it to another place, migrating to the cloud, lift and shift, that doesn't have future value. You're not creating an asset there. But if you're developing new software to make that lift and shift easier and to make it more capable, then maybe that does. The different accounting guidance boards are reactive. As companies run into challenges and they ask questions or the auditors ask questions, then I don't know that the financial metrics themselves would change, but the governing body guidance will change. And the main point I wanted to make is that we're not introducing any new strategies. These are the same basic accounting rules around what's an asset, what's a equipment lease, what's a software license, can that be capitalized? Again, when I was a CFO and from that technology background, looking at it and saying, what accounting rules that exist apply to my new cloud environment? As the technology is changing, how do my accounting rules apply and which ones might apply in different ways?
Well, I think this has been an absolutely incredible and insightful conversation. Thank you, John. I appreciate it so much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for the show, connect with us throughout social media and join us next week as we explore another business innovation topic on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.